Yeah, he walked away from his life. No shirt, just swimming trunks. It's not going to be Michael. Give it up. You know my child was murdered. Don't play with me. I'm a mother that's trying to tell you something's happened to my child.
Warning. The podcast you're about to listen to may contain graphic descriptions of violent assaults, murder, and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Murder Police Podcast. Missing. Michael Keith Gourley. Well, David, you had gone and conducted an interview regarding the missing case of then 38-year-old Michael Keith Gourley, and unfortunately, I was unable to attend with that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that interview?
Yeah, well, I wish you'd been there, but at some point you'll get to meet his mother and the rest of the family. There's some events coming up where you'll get to meet them, and they're excited about meeting you. I went and met with Michael's mother. Her name is Sandra Hasty. And I had met her just about 2 years ago at a vigil that she hosts in Junction City, Kentucky. Ever since Michael went missing in 2015, she has really applied a lot of her efforts into, first of all, of course, trying to solve Michael's case. But she's a huge victim advocate, and she actually has several Facebook pages of different things that carry information about people that are missing to try to keep their names alive. But at that interview, we conducted that at the Boyle County Library here in Kentucky. They were nice enough to give us a room to work with. And I met with his mother, Sandra, his sister, Jennifer Gourley Coffey, really wonderful woman, and also a private investigator named Mike Ward, who's a very interesting man and a former police officer from Connecticut.
Interesting. So you met them at the Boyle County, which is the Danville Library. So why don't you start with telling us, where was Michael from originally?
Michael, where he was missing from and where he is in the area where his mother lived, he was living with her at the time, was from Stanford, Kentucky. And
just outside Danville.
Exactly right. Just a drive down the road from where we live, actually, here at the farm. He went missing from a Highway 300, also known as Noblick Road in Stanford, Kentucky. And the thing that the listeners are going to hear is a lot of information about what looks like it's solvable, but there's a lot of difficulty with it.
Such as what difficulty? If it has solvability, what makes that a difficult, solvable case?
Well, as we'll hear, silence. Is that uniquely enough, if you're an investigator that gets one of these cases like this, you have a solid known last location. That's a big deal. And the reason we know it's known is we had witnesses that were with him. So you have a location. You have people that he is with when he disappears, but all of a sudden the people that he's with don't seem to be able to keep their story straight, and that's what makes it suspicious.
Absolutely. Anytime you have varying stories and circumstances that vary from what happened, where it happened, coupled with silence, I'm sure that does make for a very tough case to solve and locate even, Michael. Well, why don't you tell me and tell the listeners, did you and the family talk about Michael when he was little, when he was growing up, a little about him?
We did. A lot of information, everything from when he was born all the way through going through school.
Michael was born at Casey County Memorial in Casey County, Kentucky on December 22nd, 1976, on my grandmother's birthday. 6 pounds, 7 ounces, and 18 and a half inches long. He was a good baby, a beautiful baby. He slept the night I brought him home from the hospital. He slept the whole night. And I was at my mom's, and she ran in the room as I was getting out of bed, because we sure thought something was wrong with him. And he just woke up and smiled at us. I went in labor. My mom and dad were Christmas shopping. And me and my sister Diane and my niece Angel were at home. Well, I was washing dishes, and I was scraping out a pan outside to wash it. And all of a sudden, I felt a pain. I said, "Ooh, Diane, I feel a pain." She said, "Oh, sit down, hun." So they kept coming. And she's like, "Mom and Daddy don't have that much money to go Christmas shopping. They better get home." And it was wintertime. And they were in my grandfather's truck. So I'll never forget when I knew I was going, Diane run out with one arm in her jacket. "Don't shut off that truck. Don't shut off that truck." Anyway, my dad came in with Diane, and Mama took me to Casey County. We lived in Lincoln County. And those roads were rough, and she was slinging me all around. I'm like, "Mama, I'm going to have that baby in this truck. Don't you have that baby in this truck?" And I'm in the labor room, and my sister-in-law come in out of the cold and touched my hand and said, "Does it hurt, honey?" And I went right into labor. I went right to delivery. It was 11:22 p.m.
Well, tell me more about Michael as he grew up after that.
He went to Winfield Elementary in West Palm Beach, Florida. Then they went to, what was that, Eagle Lake Elementary.
I only remember from Kentucky.
Now, you said West Palm Beach, Florida. How do we get from Casey County to West Palm Beach?
Oh, my mom moved there. And when me and Michael and Jennifer's husband, Daddy, divorced, I went there to be with my mom, with Michael and Jennifer.
Okay, gotcha. And how long were you all in West Palm Beach?
I was there for 22 years. Michael and Jenny came back, and they stayed with their dad for 12 years.
And the name of the school was Winfield?
Winfield Elementary, West Palm Beach, Florida.
Okay, and after that,
went to school in Winter Haven, Florida. It was called Eagle Lake Elementary. And then they went to middle school in part of elementary school, middle school and high school with their dad.
And where was that at?
Well, we went to Junction City Elementary. That was in 1988, I believe. I think it was 88 that we started at Junction. I was in the fifth grade. Well, okay, Michael, he's 18 months older than me, but he got held back in kindergarten. So when I started kindergarten, we were in the same grade. So we went to school together every year until we graduated. We graduated together. But it was fifth grade that we went to Junction City Elementary. And then the middle school we went to was Boyle County Middle School. And then we went to Boyle County High School, and we both graduated from Boyle County High School in 1996.
Gotcha. Now, as he got older, did he work any jobs or anything through middle and somewhere? What kind of places did he work at?
Michael, he did welding out in Texoma, which is Oklahoma, Texas line. He did MIG welding. He welded the trailers for semis. He would weld them together. He done tree service. He did flooring. He was excellent at anything he did.
Yeah. Where did he learn how to weld?
In high school. They had a program where, like at Boyle County, they went somewhere, I think in Lincoln County, one of the area schools, like it was either Lincoln or Garrett. I don't remember which one because I didn't do it. They had a program where you could go over there and work on cars and learn how to weld and just different things like that. So he learned a lot of that stuff there. And then also our dad knew how to do pretty much anything with the car. He had an auto body shop. He built motors, fixed cars, repaired cars, you know, and then he went on to have a construction business. So we kind of worked around bulldozers and pans and scrapers and low boys and hard stuff.
What was it like growing up with Michael? What were the things that he really liked doing?
Oh, Lord, Michael Keith was a Momo, which was a motorcycle. When he was a kid, it was a Momo. So he had his first battery-operated motorcycle, and then it was four-wheeler. And then he just always had an infatuation with at night, I could hear him going, "Rin, rin, 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 rin," like he was a motorcycle. And he just had an infatuation with motorcycles. Then he got into cars. But now him and his friend, Jason had a crotch truck. And old Michael loved driving that thing. And then I think he got a motorcycle at Jeeps, right? At his dad. His dad's Jeffrey Keith Gorley. And he passed away in 2014.
2004.
I'm sorry, yeah.
And his name again was?
Jeffrey Keith Gorley. He's also known as Jeep. Everybody knew him as Jeep.
Did he have any sort of hobbies or typical young country boy, or what kind of young man was he?
Michael played football. Football was the sport that he loved. So he played that in middle school and high school all through his years that he could play, he did play.
What kind of personality do you have, especially as a brother? Let's start with that. Because that's
a jokester.
Okay. Yeah, that's
well, Michael was always a cut up. He just liked to make jokes, mostly about me. He liked to get me going, you know. And then once he got me going, then he'd just sit back and laugh.
There we go.
I'd be ticked off and he'd be laughing about it. But he was just funny. He liked to joke. He liked to cut up. He liked to more or less be like a prankster, you know. He liked hanging out with his friends. He loved football, four-wheelers, motorcycles. He liked tearing stuff down, like motors and engines, and building them back up. He loved stuff like that. He loved music. Rap music was his favorite. Country music. He liked country.
He liked country, and he liked people. He liked Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Eagles and all that. That was our traveling music. Me and Michael traveled a lot. We went to Oklahoma, Texas, Montana, Louisiana.
Florida,
South Dakota. He worked in South Dakota on the oil rigs. So he's worked on smokestacks.
So were y'all just vacationing together, or did you move around when he got different jobs and stuff like
that? No, we just decided, well, let's go somewhere. We went out to my sister's in Montana. She was disabled. She's passed away now. I took care of her the last 2 years of her life. We went out there because he wanted to go see Aunt Diane. We went to Oklahoma because he wanted to go see Aunt Donna. So we stayed out in Montana for about 4 months till we couldn't take that weather anymore. It was rough out there. Oklahoma, we stayed a little bit longer there because he enjoyed his job at Texoma Truck and Body. But then his cousin Stephen died, and Jennifer called me at work. I was working for DirecTV, and he was working at Texoma Truck and Body. And told us that Stephen passed away, which Michael and Stephen were like brothers growing up. And I brought him back to Kentucky to go to Stephen's. We went to Stephen's funeral. Michael stayed, and I went back to Oklahoma.
But Michael is a homebody. Kentucky's his home. So no matter where he went, Kentucky is where he always wanted to be. He never was one that he wanted to be by himself. You know, he always wanted to be around family. So my dad and his girlfriend at the time took him to Texas, got him set up, took a car down there for him, got him set up in his dorm with all these other guys and everything. Well, when they come back from Texas, they wanted to do sightseeing. So they made a few detours, stopped here, there, and whatnot before they made it back to Kentucky. It's a couple days later. I was working at BP in Junction at the time. It was like a day and a half later, here come Michael walking through the door. And I'm like, I thought you were supposed to be in Texas at college. He said, I didn't like it. I'm like, but Dad's not even back from Texas yet. So, like, he beat Dad back to Kentucky from he said he did not like
his
it.
His car, what did they call it,
14K? We called it 14K. It was this big, long car. I mean, I say Dad gave him a car. It was a big, long car, and it drank a lot of oil. So he had to put a lot of oil in that car to get it from Texas to Kentucky. But he beat Dad back to Kentucky. He didn't want to be there. And I'm like, that's an awful long way to go just to turn around and come right back. But he did. He just didn't like it.
What did you learn about how he went missing?
That's probably the most interesting, and when you hear his sister Jennifer talk about this in a minute, it may send chills down your spine. Where was Michael living when he went missing?
With me in Lincoln County.
Okay, so at the time when Michael goes missing, you're living in Lincoln County. As far as you can remember that, what date was the first time that you all suspected that he was missing?
the 18th of May, 2015. I called the people. He said, I'll see you later.
And what time of the day was that? Was he leaving?
9 o'clock. Well, anyway, when he didn't come home, I started calling around. No, we haven't seen him. And then one of them told me, yes, he's at. They knocked on my door. This one and another one knocked on my door, and I don't allow them in my house. And I said, what do you want? It's Michael. We need to talk to you about Michael. All I could think is something happened to him. So they say that Michael drove his truck in the pond and that he wanted it out. That was the only vehicle we had. I had a ride out there with them, and I got a hold of Jenny, sent her pictures of
that
the truck
was on
in the
17th,
pond. That was on what?
The 17th.
The 17th, right. The 17th. All right. So we go out there. It's only the front end in the pond, the front tires in the pond. It's not sunk in the pond, but it was hard getting out. But we got it out, and I drove it up out of there. Well, I called the guy's house. They said that they dropped Michael off at 11 o'clock that night. He said Michael was there. So, okay. Well, he didn't come home the next day. You know, I had an uneasy feeling, and Jennifer was at work. And you can tell her, you can tell him what happened at work.
Well, okay, so let me back up here.
Yeah, I was going to say, take it through.
Let me back up here.
Yeah, how you came
so
about it.
So Michael was actually in jail for a couple of months, and he got out on May the 12th. And he was out for about 5 days when he went missing. So anyway, on the 17th, that's when a couple females come to Mom's and told her that Michael had drove his truck in a pond at this house, which most people are familiar with, but I won't mention the address or nothing. So I said, well, when my husband gets off work, we'll come out and see if his Jeep could pull the truck out of the pond, you know, so we didn't have to pay like a tow truck or anything like that to do it. So we went out there, and his Jeep couldn't pull it out. It was too stuck. So he called one of his buddies. His buddy came out with his big Dodge truck, and he was able to pull it out. Then after we left there, we took the truck, I think, to my house, because we didn't really know at that point if it was safe to drive or not. We didn't know what kind of damage was done to the truck or whatnot. So we took it to my house, and we took Mom home, came back next morning. I got up, went to work, you know, like a normal day. Mom was at home. Michael never came home that night, though. While I was at work that day, and I know this sounds far-fetched, but I had like a voice that just come to me and said, find Michael. And I'm, you know, I'm typing at my computer, and I'm like, find Michael. Okay. So I just, all right, go back to typing on my computer. It says, find Michael. And I was like, okay, now I need to find Michael. So I was like, sitting here thinking, I'm at work. I can't just go find Michael. So I went back to working again. And it said again, find Michael. So I'm just like, okay, I'll find Michael, but I can't do that till I get off work, you know. So I just called Mom, and I was like, did Michael come home? She said, no. I was like, well, where's he at? She said, well, I guess he's at this person's house that they said they left him at. I said, well, we need to find him. Where's this person live? And she didn't know where he lived. She knew who this person was, but she didn't know where that house was. So she started calling around, trying to find out where the house was, trying to get a hold of Michael, whatnot. Couldn't get a hold of him. And I said, you know, well, when I get off work, I'll call my grandma and see if she's talked to him. I'll call my uncle, you know, but just people that I knew that Michael may have talked to or been in contact with to see if they had talked to him. So when I got off work, none of them had talked to him. I got back a hold of Mom, and Mom said, well, you know, they're giving us conflicting information. They're saying different times of when he was there, when he left, whatnot. So she's like, something's not right. I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll come pick you up and we'll just go looking for him, see if we can find him. Went and picked Mom up, which granted, she lived out in McKinney. It's pretty good little ways out through there. And I also had to pick the kids up because they had got off the bus at my husband's aunt's house. So I had to go pick them up, then go pick mom up. When I went to go pick her up, the strangest thing was there was a state trooper car sitting right beside her road that I had to turn on to get to her house. And I'd never seen a state trooper in that area before. So I was like, this is kind of odd, you know. So I went up, I got mom, we come back down, the state trooper was still there. And I told mom, I was like, I feel like we need to just like stop and talk to this trooper and just kind of tell him like, hey, you know, this is a situation going on. Michael didn't come home. Trying to get a hold of the people he's supposed to be with. They're given conflicting information about everything. And we think something might be wrong. So we give all that information to that trooper. And then mom got a hold of the two people that said they had dropped Michael off at this particular house. And they wanted to meet up with us. They wanted to know what we were going to be doing. We're like, well, we're going to try to go find Michael, but we need to know where you took him to. Like, take us to the house where you took him so we can see if he's still there. So we met up with them at a gas station, and they showed us where this house was. And then once we got there, it really got weird from that point.
When we get there, first they said, I called him on the 17th. He said that Michael was there at 11 p.m. Well, when I tried to call him the next day to say, well, Michael didn't come home, where's he at? He wouldn't answer. He wouldn't answer. So finally I messaged, where's Michael? He messaged back, don't know. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? When did he leave? Between 8:30 and 9 last night. And I said, where'd he go? He left walking, I think. So when we get that, I said, walking where? He said, towards Junction City. So, of course, when we get there, I get out. Jennifer's, they're trying to block her from going towards the shed or the backyard of the place where Michael last was. And I'm walking up down the road because Michael's hat and shoes were on the porch of the man's. And I'm walking up down the road because, you know, if he left walking between 8:30 and 9, you know, you could have seen any kind of toe prints or anything in the grass. Nothing at all. So anyway, they kept blocking Jennifer from going towards the shed or the backyard. So then it just got stupid from there. And I called them and told them, called the state police and told them that I had Michael's hat and shoes. They said, well, who are you talking about? I said, my son, Michael Gorley. I put a missing person report out on him. Well, we don't have anything in the computer. I said, well, that was about 5 o'clock. I said, my son's missing. So they sent another trooper out about 2 o'clock in the morning on the 19th. Told him I had Michael's hat and shoes. Did he want to take him in for evidence? Did he want to take the truck in for evidence? Because by that time it was in my yard. No, nothing makes any sense to me.
I'm not really sure what happened with that. And he probably thought we were crazy. To be honest, he probably thought, okay, this grown man didn't come home after one night and you want me to file a missing person? You know, like, we didn't have any valuable information other than we just suspected that something was wrong. You know, you just got that feeling. Something's not right. Something's wrong. You just don't know what. And you're searching. You know, I don't know if you've ever had, like somebody pass away in your family and you just have this overwhelming feeling of there's just something wrong. Something's not right.
Like your intuition speaks to you.
Exactly. And
gut instinct.
You don't know what until somebody calls you and says, oh, by the way, you know, such and such passed away or this, you know, you just don't know. You just know that you have this feeling that something's just horribly wrong. It was that feeling is what I had. And I'm sure mom probably did too. But, all we really knew is that he didn't come home and that where he was at, the people were not giving us any indication of where he was, why he would have left there, you know, where we could find him, how to get in contact with him, nothing like that.
And from what you're telling me, not only that, but where would you use words like evasive? Were they just not, were they hinky when you were,
was, when we pulled the truck out of the pond and mom called to tell this person where Michael was supposedly at, to let him know that the truck had been pulled out of the pond. It was like 11 o'clock that night. And he said that Michael was there and that he was kind of acting out, acting up, and he was getting on his nerves and he was going to, what did he say? He was going to beat his ass or something like that.
Hey, you know there's more to the story, so go download the next episode like the true crime fan that you are.
The Murder Police Podcast is hosted by Wendy and David Lyons and was created to honor the lives of crime victims so their names are never forgotten. It is produced, recorded, and edited by David Lyons. The Murder Police Podcast can be found on your favorite Apple or Android podcast platform, as well as at murderpolicepodcast.com, where you will find show notes, transcripts, information about the presenters, and much, much more. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, which is closed captioned for those that are hearing impaired. Just search for the Murder Police Podcast and you will find us. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more and give us 5 stars and a written review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcast from. Make sure to subscribe to the Murder Police Podcast and set your player to automatically download new episodes so you get the new ones as soon as they drop. And please tell your friends. Lock it down, Judy.